Hey gearheads, and welcome to Garage Talk, a discussion about all things automotive. I'm Corey.
And I'm Matt. And each week, this podcast will serve as a catalyst for discussion on all sorts of topics that grind our gears, rev our engines, or just need a bit more conversation.
Oops, I did it again.
I swear.
I got you talking EVs.
I'm going to have to write into the contract or something that we go at least 6 months without any discussion of anything EV at some point.
So pivoting this week, we had the joy, the privilege, the honor of speaking with Brian Dorr, who is involved in many, many things, auto-wise, Explore. I'm going to butcher it. I'm going to let him plug it later. But yeah, just many, many different things. Tread Magazine. Huh, I remembered one.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He truly does. He's been in the business for a while. He's lived the experience by taking an off-road van out into the world. So he's seen the world from many different points of view.
Yeah.
And we pick his brain a little bit about not only the LA Auto Show that we all were at very recently. That's not proper English. I do apologize. And then we may or may not segue into, you know, the more fun stuff, you know, off-roading and, you know, things we all enjoy. So
everything not EV.
Right. Right.
The fun stuff.
We tied it. We kind of connected the dots a little, EV off-road. But yeah. Anyway, without further ado, we will bring Brian on for this week's episode. All right. It is awesome to get to continue the LA Auto Show journey and sit down and just cover some of our own feelings and opinions with Brian Dorr from AutoWise, among many other things. Brian, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good. Yeah, happy to be home for once. The show season's been nuts lately.
Yes. It's one of those things, you didn't know what you miss until you don't get to travel, and then it all comes back with a vengeance, and you're like, I miss my bed. Bring me my bed, please.
I think it was 18 months of one or two events, and the last 11 weeks I've been on the road 3-plus days a week, every week. So it's been nuts. Yeah, I'm happy to couple weeks here, spend some time with some family. It'll be good.
Awesome.
Yes. Good. Yes. And you've got a little one at home, don't you?
I do. A little over 5-month-old little baby girl, Rose.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Awesome.
Well, congrats on that. Yeah, it is very hard to be away at that age. Well, any age, let's be honest. But sometimes they make it a little easier.
I'll say it's 13, 14-year-old punk. It's kind of easy to leave at that point.
Yeah, but when you're counting in months, it's
okay,
like,
yeah, fair enough.
Maybe escape for a little bit of sleep on the plane or something. Who knows? But
there's probably more sleep at these trade shows than I get at home, which is funny.
Yes. I remember traveling shortly after my now 3-year-old came into the world and thinking, I feel bad for leaving her home with Tucker, but I'm going to get some sleep while I can. So sorry, Holly. I love you. God bless you. But time for sleep. So the show in particular that the three of us have attended and was more or less the big news of the past week or so is the LA Auto Show. The first really, I don't want to say really big because even it was scaled down and Chicago was about half of what it normally is, but easing back into the swing of things after like New York cancellation and things of that nature. So first want to get your thoughts. You've been doing this a little bit longer than we have. What were your initial impressions on the LA Auto Show?
Yeah, man, I've been doing this for a little over a decade, but haven't gone to a ton of auto shows. I will preface it with that. Yeah. I do a lot of more adventure stuff and that kind of thing. So the new car stuff I do a lot of, but the auto show scene, honestly, even back in the day, you could get a lot of it online and through digital press conferences and stuff. These days, though, it's important, especially after 18 months away, to shake hands and do the networking thing.
Yes.
So that was the big part about LA for sure, was just seeing people in person and actually physically shaking hands in some instances.
Yes.
But yeah, I was there with Land Rover this year. Mazda pulled out about a month and a half, 2 months before the show. So they weren't there at all. They had a local dealer have a few vehicles there on the show floor, but no new vehicles. They released that the CX-50.
I was very sad not to see that one there.
100%. Yeah, I was excited about that one. That's something right up the alley of a lot of my readers on Gear Junkie and AutoWise. And yeah, it was sad not to see it. We wrote some stuff about from press releases, but yeah, it was odd to not have them there. But their press guys were there, so I did bump into them in the hallways at some of the other press conferences and got to chat with them a little bit. So that was cool. But yeah, the big story I think was, you know, EV SUVs and then, the new Range Rover. It's freaking awesome.
Yep.
Thing's cool.
Yep. Well, before we get too much into the show, you've alluded to some of the ventures that you were on. Give us a little bit, maybe backstory on you, some of the places, people can find you and what brought you into this, automotive world.
Right on. Yeah, let's see, the 2-minute version. about a little over a decade ago, I had a job running a big outdoor store, specifically in the paddle sport industry here in Portland, Oregon. I come from that industry, outdoor industry. I've been going to outdoor retailer for years and years and years, since like 2003 or four. It was my first year at that show. So outdoor industry veteran, and I saw three friends of mine, all younger, pass away in under 6 months, all kind of living their best life, and realized that I was working way too many hours, not getting the respect or money that I deserved, and needed to change things up. Life is still precious, and time is that only thing we can't control. So it was time to move on. So I bought a 4x4 van. I'm a big whitewater kayaker, so I threw my kayaks and my skis and my mountain bikes, climbing gear, running gear, and kiteboard gear on the truck. And are on the 4x4 van and hit the road full time to try to become a action sports outdoor photographer. That's my passion, is action photography. So that was like the hotness when it was van life and overland was just becoming a thing.
Yeah.
So I kind of was in the right place at the right time, or wrong place at the right time, whichever you look at that. To create a career out of it. The outdoor industry is really, really hard to make money on the media side of things. Most of the outlets have all folded, especially in the niche ones and paddle sports and otherwise, tend to not stick around very long. So making money in that was tough, but making money in overland and van life at the time was much easier. So I kind of pieced things together, taking photographs of my adventures and sharing those stories through a bunch of different outlets all over the internet and in print. And that has led me to a career in automotive. I specialize in overland and 4x4 travel to start with. I teach a lot of that stuff, but now I love I love sports cars. I love track performance driving. I'm a big motorcycle guy, but mostly on the adventure side of things, but enjoy the street stuff as well. And yeah, it's kind of crazy road of 8+ years full-time on the road. Met my wife, settled down a little bit now. I'm in Portland, Oregon, and been running my site, exploringelements.com, for that whole time. Tons of social media presence. The website's lagged in the recent years, so I've spent all my time and efforts building other people's content. Now my day job is running autowise.com and the motors editor at gearjunkie.com, which are both owned by Lola Digital Media. Okay. So I started that right at the beginning of the pandemic. And then I still freelance for a bunch of people, mostly Tread Magazine and Diesel World Magazine, which are both engaged media outlets, but both in print. So I'm the feature editor at Tread and a regular contributor at Diesel World. I do a lot of photography shoots for them. And again, I love the photography angle. So when I'm getting print magazines with covers of my photo, like cover shots, like that, I love that stuff. It's really cool. The internet's great and all, but it doesn't quite have the same feel.
Exactly.
So yeah, that's kind of my background. I live in Portland, Oregon now. And lately, like I said, I've been traveling a ton. Everything from Lexus Laguna Seca to M4 GT4 race car program with BMW at Thermal, SEMA show, the Land Rover Trek competition. I went and was on that with the wave with all the journalists, which was really cool, and won that, which was...
I was going to say, didn't y'all win that one? I'm pretty sure y'all won that one.
Did win that one. We beat Lindsey Vonn, which was fun. only time I can say I beat an Olympian at something, probably.
There you go.
Yeah. So staying active, staying busy, and definitely engaged with many manufacturers, many different products out there. So that's awesome. Leaning back into LA a little bit and how those two things mesh, you alluded to the massive influx, and it's California, it's LA, of EVs. We knew to expect it going into the show. We were not surprised when all the press conferences were EVs or hybrids. The Kia snuck a hybrid in right before bringing out an all-new EV concept. But what, pray tell, was perhaps your favorite EV that was featured at the LA show?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I will note that Range Rover was gas only.
Yes, yes.
to start with. It's coming out later with the other stuff.
Nice.
Favorite EV there. That's actually being made or a concept? Because there is a difference. The
favorite EV that was at the show. So that would encompass concepts. You can even throw Rivian and Lucid Air in there because they made the parade lap during the Car of the Year parade. So if you want to mention those, we did get a little sneak peek at those.
They were kind of there, right? What was it? I'm trying to remember the name of... Was it Edison Futures?
Yes.
No. So they had the van thing, and then they unveiled the truck with a four-door truck with a collapsible solar array on the back of it.
Yes.
If you got a chance to look in those, they're really, really cool. The wheels were some of the best wheels I've ever seen on a prototype or a EV coming out. Just super interesting. So I would say probably that one, but I also want to preface that with those were mega early concept truck thing, prototype things that I don't know if that company will ever have a production product on US shores. So that's a tough one in terms of actual product production. The Subaru Solterra and the Toyota B4XYZ horrible naming structure thing that they have. Those two are pretty much the same thing. And both probably going to be really good vehicles. Again, it's hard to tell without crawling around the insides of them and driving them. I drive vehicles and do reviews constantly. And it's really hard to tell. I was just in a Model Y a friend's parents just bought yesterday. I got to go play with it. I haven't played with Teslas. And I was kind of impressed with it. But the build quality, it was really rough. So again, you got to actually physically touch stuff and experience it before you can really make a judgment. But those things look cool and they're going to be, it's a good size. It's a good, in theory, price point. So, you know, big manufacturers that are well known. So they're not going anywhere and you're going to be able to warranty it and get parts for it. So,
and Subaru leaned in very heavily into that outdoorsy adventure lifestyle. Their entire booth was a partnership with the National Park Service and was set up like a national park. And we were both blown away and motion sick at the press conference.
I was just gonna say that I don't get motion sick, but that floor while watching the press conference was like moving under you, like it was like leaves or something. It was really trippy in a bad way.
I had to catch myself a couple of times, like feeling like I was falling over, but I really wasn't. It was weird.
By that point, we had been on our feet for about 4 miles traversing the show. We had missed breakfast, and we were running on very little sleep and jet lag. So, yes, by the time we got there with the wraparound screen and the moving floor, I grabbed onto the tripod a few times, just brace myself and regroup. But my goodness.
Sounds familiar.
Yes.
So, I think the Subaru booth in particular, with the way they were leaning into that, they were leaning into the huge nonprofit push that they've always had, but they're doing another big one with planting trees and the National Park Service, and their next promotion for sales is like next couple of weeks or something, like another give back or something, give back something. So a percentage of your new car bought purchase goes towards like
a charity of
five choices that you can choose to where it goes to. So I think that's what they were pushing, and obviously the cars they're really pushing right now are their Wilderness line of products.
So have you gotten a hold of either of the Wilderness edition Subarus lately?
I have driven the Outback, yes.
Okay.
Outback Wilderness.
Yeah. Well, we'll pick your brain and go off of script a little here. What were your thoughts on that one, Mr. Outdoor Lifestyle?
From really far away, it looks interesting. I like the ground clearance. I like the engine's fine. The interior's over the top plasticky, including the exterior that I really don't like. The interior is very rubbery and the exterior is very plasticky. Yeah. And none of it actually feels good or looks good when you're really close to it. The CVT transmission, I personally just can't get past, so I'll never own one. It's just a, it kills the driving experience. It just isn't good at all. When it comes to capability, I've had it off-road and it's capable. It has ground clearance. The all-wheel drive system smart. The transmission deals with it good enough. And the engine's got plenty of power. So, you know, with a proper AT tire, it's a totally usable adventure wagon in every way. In terms of looks and like the feel of things and the driving experience, it's a no-go for me.
Yeah. So I'm surprised how well we had one from a local dealer that loaned it to us. And we took it out to an off-road adventure park near us the same day we were testing a 4Runner TRD Pro. And putting those back-to-back, we weren't allowed to officially compare them because we didn't actually have them at the same time, quote-unquote. But just jumping in from one to the other and seeing everything the TRD Pro was able to do, and then the Subaru to jump right in there, and you know, it did it a little differently, but to be able to follow along and say, you know, I can do what the big boys can do, we're thoroughly impressed with the chops on that. And yes, the tires absolutely would be the first upgrade that any owner would need to make on that one.
I think that goes back to off-road in general. Like if you have power to all four wheels with some type of mechanical or electronic smart device to keep the traction going to wheels that aren't spinning, and you have decent tires and some ground clearance, it almost doesn't matter. Like, I mean, departure and breakover angle and stuff matters, but that kind of plays into the clearance thing. So if you have those combo, you can do amazing things with vehicles. I mean, even in two-wheel drive, honestly, if you know how to drive them. Like, but yeah, you can chase the best of them with an Outback or a suit, even Crosstrek or whatever, if you drive it in such a way. But the TRD Pro obviously is going to go further. It's going to hold up way better. Yeah, like you take a rock to the sill on a 4Runner, or it's going to be okay. You do that to the Outback Wilderness, especially, you're just going to rip off a bunch of plastic.
Right.
Very much.
Well, to your point on tires, so we spoke a couple of weeks ago to Mercedes Lilienthal from the Rebel Rally in the EV ID4, and pretty much she ran through all the mods that they did. It was essentially stock for tires, skid plates, and things of that nature, but tires is the first upgrade. So yes, to your point, even what is essentially an on-road family crossover can be very capable with those things, proper tires and power to the four wheels.
Yeah, whenever I talk off-road and overland a lot to people, and they're always asking, oh, what modifications do I need to do? I need this bumper, and I need sliders, and I need this winch, and all this stuff. I'm like, no, pump your brakes. Number one, put good rubber under the truck if it doesn't have it. A few vehicles do come with it stock, like the TRD 4Runner, I think, has got decent rubber under it from the factory. Good tires, maybe a tiny lift to fit a slightly bigger tire and a smaller wheel if you can fit it around the brake calipers in the vehicle you're on. So again, wheels, tires combo to make it work. Give yourself a little more clearance, a little more sidewall to work with, and good tread. And then I tell everybody, just buy a set of Maxtrax, not some cheap knockoffs. Buy a set of Maxtrax. You can buy minis, so they're even cheaper, for like something like a Subaru Outback. You don't need the huge ones. And a recovery strap and two soft shackles, and make sure the vehicle has recovery points that are usable. That combo will get you through 99% of what most people do, even when they go off-roading. I'm going to put that in air quotes. I travel around the world with that kit. I have a Maxtrax in a bag with a recovery strap and two soft shackles, and that's it. Like that and a Leatherman, and like you can use some zip ties and some Gorilla tape you can buy in the third world country you're visiting, and you're good to go.
And that's spoken from true experience, because I've seen the van you mentioned earlier, and Matt would be drooling over it, I'm sure.
Just talking about it, I'm already excited to see it, so.
A 4x4 van I sold many years ago. I built a Ram pickup with a crazy camper on it, like overlanding. I sold that, and now I got a Lexus GX460 built to the absolute nines. It won like a top 10 award at SEMA 2 years ago when I debuted it.
Dang it. Do you love it?
I do really like it. There's a couple of things I don't love, like the power. It's got a big old V8, guzzles premium fuel, but even re-geared, it's not that quick.
Wow. Okay. Very cool.
But I do love it. There's not much else out there like it, honestly.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So with the industry that you're in specifically, I'm curious, you know, LA was so EV focused, and for overlanding, it's kind of difficult to go out in the middle of nowhere and not be able to carry solar extra panels, electricity Matt. With you. What's kind of the consensus from your side of the industry? What are you getting feedback wise as far as the EVs are pushing so hard into everything?
Yeah. There's a ton of talk and chatter, and most of it is from diehards that are armchair quarterbacks that only go out on the weekends and don't need anything except the EV, and they're the ones the loudest about, oh, this isn't going to work, I can't get far enough and whatever. So I've been on the furthest road you can possibly go in the U.S. in terms of like distance between fuel stops on my motorcycle and on my truck. So like Dalton Highway in Alaska, Trans Labrador in Canada, been there, done that. They're not that far. Like 300 miles. If you can get 300 miles of dead flat terrain, basically between fuel stops, you're more than good. Like I carried tons of extra fuel both times. I never used it. I used it to like save myself a few dollars on fuel because it was cheaper in certain places than in other places, but that's about it. I do want to dispel one myth about the solar panel thing. Everybody's throwing solar panels on the roof and all this nonsense. I have friends in the industry that are like way smarter than I am that actually design and build this stuff. Solar technology is not there yet to have a solar array on a vehicle that really gives you any substantial range in any way whatsoever. I mean, you leave it for a month in the sun in Arizona and you might top the battery off. Like it's just not for the amount of surface area you have. All of that, you know, all that tech is exponentially growing and we'll get there, but it's not a thing yet.
Yeah, it's funny you brought up the Edison Future and the truck with the solar array, and then that was a big selling point of the Fisker Ocean. And I noticed the CEO went completely off script when he was making his presentation, because I peeked over at the teleprompter and I was like, where is he? Like, he's just rambling with his box of water on stage. And I was just like, okay, well, you know, he hit the high points when there was like a video that needed to be referenced, but he just kept right on trucking. But where he, I think, misphrased or misled in his speech, because we have it on our YouTube channel, is he was talking about the 2,000 miles of range that the solar roof, the largest in the industry, would add. And I'm like, okay, I know solar. That doesn't sound right, but, you know, we rolled with it because clickbait and whatnot, but, you know, there's been a lot of fun chatter on our Fisker Ocean video because of that, and I'm like, look, we're just repeating what the CEO told us. We know, but, again, we're, maybe 6 months to a year away from really seeing oceans on the road. Yep. So we'll see, you know, the particulars of what actually makes it to production on that. But yeah,
I think the Ocean will be a pretty cool vehicle. And I mean, Fisker's been a legend in the industry and done some really cool stuff and has huge aspirations. But I know from everything I've talked to different analysts and things at the show, he was there drumming up money. Like there, he's full court press trying to get more money to get everything dialed in and get that thing to production. I mean, how many years have we been talking about the Fisker Ocean and had it pretty much fully revealed? I mean, it's been many years now. Now COVID and whatever, you can argue. But I think it's really cool. But there's stuff like that, like the solar roof, that's total gimmick and just for people that are excited about, you know, trying to feel more green, not actually be more green. Like, because it doesn't add anything to it.
So to that point, I feel like I've held my tongue at least to an extent when it comes to some of the comments and things on our YouTube channel. But
I appreciate it, Matt.
It felt like most all of the concept EV reveals and even the new production, I won't specifically call out any particular manufacturer because they all did it. But there's this overwhelming opportunistic, we're going to blow smoke up your butt kind of a feel when it comes to what they want to do with the promotion of these EVs and how it's going to save the world and we're going to plant trees and we're going to, you know, feed hungry children and all these types of things. And And what felt real was hearing from Fisker and what they're actually doing to invest in that vehicle and what the production process looks like. So that was refreshing to me, in contrast to a lot of the other EVs that were there and being released and things that they were talking about. It just felt more genuine coming from Fisker. Like, yeah, we have reclaimed carbon fiber in the wheels. We have, you know, we're making seat covers out of T-shirts and fishnets. Like, that's that's actual, you know, materialized stuff,
right?
Not just planting trees somewhere.
And he, in theory, again, I don't know how, like, it might be ether vaporware at the moment, but in theory, he has a 10-year lifespan of his vehicle planned, right, with a full plan to recycle everything in the vehicle at the end of that 10 years.
Yeah.
At least that's the plan on paper that he's promoting to get money.
Right.
We'll see it in if that's even feasible in a reality situation, but it is really cool that he's trying to do as much as possible to use actual recycled materials and things like that. And other companies are definitely talking about that and touting those kind of things. But you're right. Most of it is like, you're like, you read between the lines, you're like, wait a minute, there's 5% of that in that material. Like, this is not actually matter at all.
Right.
Like, let's move on, guys. Like, I appreciate the effort, but let's do a real effort if we're going to do this.
Yeah. You're spending more money in the marketing than you are actually affecting change. Yep. So
that brings an interesting kind of juxtaposition. So we went from the Fisker press conference, which, to your point, yeah, he's out there trying to drum up money and, tout his brand, which he is obviously very passionate about, that he is able to go out there and go completely off the cuff. And then right after that was the Hyundai press conference, which almost felt like a joke immediately following, because it was all video presentation. Like, the CEO wasn't there. No one of major importance was there at the show to introduce the vehicle. And in fact, I think we watched the same YouTube video that you could watch from wherever you were at the exact time. The only difference was we had metal in front of us, whereas other people didn't. And
plastic.
True. And, you know, I don't know. It was just a very interesting juxtaposition going from a smaller brand that had that passion or that fire and the desire to actually make a change, and then you come to one of the big new juggernauts in the industry in Hyundai, and they more or less phoned it in. You're not going to call them out. I'm going to call them out.
I like it. That's smart. Hyundai, I think, is the leader right now, or one of the major leaders, especially in EV in design. Like, the new Ioniq 5 looks absolutely amazing. Yes. Like, that thing, this on paper and otherwise, is really cool. I have an Hyundai electric, the current Ioniq, the 2020, in my driveway. I'm leasing it for my wife for her commuter car. And it was like $69 a month, no joke. So it was a no-brainer. It's like a free car, essentially. Yeah. That's why I have it. It's honestly not very good. Like, it's fine as transportation. We got the one with the sunroof and leather and, like, powered heated seats. And, like, it's a nice car to use on a daily basis, but within a week, like, the black paint was swirled and horrible. It has weird dents in it that magically appeared, I think, from some leaves falling on it.
What do you expect for a $70 a month car?
No kidding.
Well, but it's a $40,000 sticker price car. Oh, wow. It was just, they're trying to clear them out because they got the new stuff coming out, and it's low. It's only 160 mile range. I mean, it's you know, it's their old tech, and they're just trying to move some vehicles at the end of last year. But yeah, so the new stuff, though, is really, really good. So I do think that they're doing big things. My guess is the phone-in stuff for LA is because they couldn't get out of Korea because of COVID restrictions. I think there's a lot of the Asian countries just have major, major restrictions on that, and the U.S. in relation. So I think, like, CES this year is going to be really weird because, like, even at LA, there was no Germans.
Right.
There was not all the Asian manufacturers that were there kind of only had U.S. representatives. They didn't have any of the big players in the company there talking shop like you're talking about. Seems to be England is on kind of same page as us. So they don't care. I mean, we had everybody from Land Rover there talking Range Rover Jaguar. So, yeah, it's an interesting landscape right now with COVID and supply chain shortages and car shows not happening and happening, and what cities are allowing events and which ones aren't. And I mean, in LA, I think, I don't know if they do that for the public, but for us, we all had to have proof of vaccinations right. to get in, which was interesting for a car show. I hadn't seen that before. So, you know, just different people are going to be at all these, and it's going to be interesting. I mean, SEMA was like so quiet. It was like crickets there. It was nuts how quiet it was this year. And it's because all the international people weren't there. We had like, I think it was 40% down in attendance.
That's crazy. Well, to the point of big names not making it there, turn the page a little, and Kia, sub-brand of Hyundai, actually did bring some big players, and the CEO of, let's see, they rebranded. It's Kia Motors and Kia Motors America. No, they're not Kia Motors.
No, it's just Kia.
They dropped the motors because they're going EV, so there we go. He was actually there. So I was thoroughly impressed and wanted, of all the concept vehicles, of all the unveiled vehicles, I'd say the one for me that I was ready to take home right then and there was the Kia EV9. From the moment it rolled out, I was giving Matt the thumbs up saying, yes, they nailed it. Shut up and take my money. Like, I would gladly. And then to find out it was a three-row SUV on top of that, because I was fully expecting two-row. It was deceptively large once we got up next to it. So just all around very impressed with that version of what Hyundai showed, because it was built on the same platform as that 7 concept. Felt much more attainable, more realistic, and more my lifestyle for sure.
And it was, right? Like, that's the interesting part, is that it's the same vehicle, essentially, under the skin. But they packaged it very differently. And the Kia, while we're not going to see that come to production, we're going to see something sort of kind of like it.
Right.
Where the 7 concept, they say it's going to come like that, but I call BS. Like, there's a lot of things that aren't going to come like that. The movable furniture and the appliances in it supposedly are actually going to happen. So like, it'll have a fridge option and things like that, which is kind of cool and totally reasonable in today's world to have that. The other thing I want to touch on that we were going back and forth on, touch on this, is there was one other major manufacturer there. They were German and they had a massive stock of new vehicles and they were all gas powered. Porsche being right. that company.
Right. Well, they did have a few EVs out there.
But nothing new. There right. was EV, yeah. right?
Yeah. It was the red one. Help me out here, Matt. You're the Porsche guy. Porsche guy.
The Sport Turismo.
The GTS Sport Turismo?
Yeah. Sport Turismo.
Which they said was... Not, they were
you're right.
world premiere of, but other than
right,
that...
So that's in between the 4S, the Taycan 4S and the Taycan 4S Turbo.
Right.
So it slots right in between the two. So you're right. That is a full electric new car.
Quote unquote.
It's a slightly lower vehicle than the Cross Turismo with less plastic on it.
Yeah.
And more go-fast bits a little bit.
And let's face it, these German brands and Audis treading the same water, and you know, it's probably all the same people. They are getting into a very odd situation with naming structures, because they're abandoning their old way of naming things, where in Porsche or Porsche's world, they're kind of keeping some of the same nomenclature, even though they should have dropped it. Because what is a turbo EV? Like, come on, think outside the box here, but like. Everything Audi is e-tron, so it's an e-tron this or an e-tron that. And I'm like, at what point is it just the SUV? Like, what point do we drop the e-tron? I've got the opportunity, talking about German vehicles, I'll be driving an EQS tomorrow for our YouTube channel. So interested to see, you know, some of these brands jumping into the electric foray. But yeah, not anything that just overly excites me. To the point where I'm like, man, I have got to get behind the wheel of that.
I mean, the EQS is going to be an awesome experience. I haven't been in it yet, but the interior of that thing looks unbelievable. The exterior kind of looks like a
Jelly
Chrysler bean. From the early 2000s. But
you know, I've got like a picture of it pulled up right now.
Yeah.
I would say maybe a 300 or a Concorde or an Intrepid.
Yeah,
somewhere,
Intrepid.
Somewhere,
yes. Intrepid, yeah. Yep. Concorde, Intrepid. Yeah, that's what I was picturing in my head when I first saw it. Yeah. I was like, especially the way they had the darker front fenders and back in the prototype car. Yeah. But the interior, like Mercedes, man, oh, man, they're doing such cool stuff. And that tech under that is pretty good. I think that'll be a cool vehicle to drive. I haven't been in it yet. But, I don't know. The Porsche stuff's nuts, though. I mean, that GTS, it's a beautiful car. Like, the Taycan GTS Sport Turismo. It's way too long. At least, like, Porsche, like, again, they're weird. Like, turbo, there's no turbo, right? It's all electric. But I have to say, like, the naming nomenclature sort of kind of makes sense in their lineup. Some of these other ones, like Mercedes, I can never get it right to what vehicles what. Like the GLC, GLB, like 456. You're like, what is going on here? Like that one vehicle that has three rows and is awesome, right. But it's the AMG with the thing, but it's a GLA, not a GLA. Like,
yeah. Okay, trying to describe to my wife the first two Mercedes products I tested was an AMG G63, and then the next one was an AMG GT63. Two totally different vehicles separated by one letter. It's like, how can you do this? How can you be so obtuse to the world around you that you think that this is going to flow in the marketplace? Like,
it's horrible. And it's BMW is close behind them with crazy 3 and 4 series stuff that doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, I thought I had them figured out at one point. Now they're doing Grand Coupes and oh my gosh. Like, yeah, we could do a whole episode on
that. That was the only thing I really liked about the new Acura Integra was, hey, it has a name.
Okay, so speaking of the Integra.
Boy. Here we go.
I was holding my breath to get to see that thing in person. And I was very much looking forward to cat out of the bag here, roasting it with Matt, because neither one of us exactly have the fondest of opinions of what was delivered. I understand it's true to its gussied up Civic nature, but in today's age, like, what they hyped and what we got were two totally different things. So, it was a huge omission from the show, and then to see it the 2-3 days later at Radwood just shows where Acura is really focusing and investing their time and money. It was beyond me that here you had a product launch the week before and you totally omit the LA Auto Show.
And it honestly, because of everything you just said, fits the LA Auto Show model way more than the Radwood model. Like, everybody at Radwood is going to roast the crap out of that thing, like, because it's not what we expected. Like, you stamp Integra into the front bumper, and that makes it cool. Like, no doubt it's going to be a great car, zero doubt. And I would like to drive it at speed on a racetrack, burn some rubber with that thing. I'll bet it's fun. But it's a gussied up Civic, which they always are, but it's just not, like, give us an Integra, right? Yeah. We want, like, something that we can give to our kid when they're 18 or whatever. That's a 2-door, like, sort of fastish fun car to drive.
Yeah.
With economy, with a manual transmission, sunroof. Come on.
Yeah. Such a big miss with that nameplate and everything in it, which is kind of interesting. We had, about 30-minute charging stop in the shadows of the Z06 booth where we met a friend from, where was he from, Matt?
Dubai,
yes. Met a friend from Dubai and just got to talking hypercars and supercars and Corvette Z06 because it was right there staring at us.
And pickup trucks.
In the flesh. And he made a very valid point that cars across the board, your Ioniq excluded, cars across the board have just become so good. Like, everything is pretty well quality when you think back to the Radwood era, the 90s, where good luck with some things. But we've come such a long way and expect so much out of our vehicles that when you really start, you know, quote unquote, pushing the envelope, his assessment of the Z06 was it was vanilla supercar. It was and also ran in a sea of mid-engine vehicles. And he talked about the silhouette being the same. And, you know, there's some credibility to that. I mean, there's only so much you can do with physics and wheelbase and all that stuff. But kind of curious, pick your brain a little on maybe where, since this was our first opportunity seeing it as well, did you get to check out the Z06 at all? And have you experienced any C8 Corvette in your circles?
Yeah, definitely. As you say, that's a good segue. And there's a couple other vehicles I definitely want to hit on that were at the show that the public's going to get to see for the first time, and most people are. C6, I saw at SEMA. They rolled it across the stage opening night. They had it in the booth there. The wing is ridiculous, so yes. Definitely not vanilla. I don't like it, but it's definitely not vanilla. I do like the little ducktail thing on the more mellow Z06. You can get it with either way. I think it's a track package type it thing is. With the aero. But that wing is horrid. I have driven the C8 convertible in a bright orange. Really cool vehicle. I love the cockpit layout. I hate the 8 bazillion buttons that it has down the center console. While driving, you get used to it, I think. Yep. They're really useful buttons, all of them, but it's really distracting. Like, if you need to find something on this huge center console full of buttons, you're like staring in the car going, where's the seat heater? Like, it's because they're all the same button in a huge line with different little logos on them. And it's like, but the car drives really good. I mean, it's, you know, the C7 on, like, they're good cars. The styling, it's a kind of a mess, quite honestly. There's way too many lines on that car that intersect at weird intersections and just don't flow. The general silhouette is really beautiful. Like, you just take away a lot of the body lines and kind of dial it back to the basics. You're like, oh, that's a cool car, right? So I think they missed on that. The seats are awesome. They're beautiful. The interior, like I said, I think it's really cool. Like, I love the floating elements in the dash are really, really neat and unique to that car. The digital dash and the steering wheel and stuff are really nice. The steering wheel, it's definitely not like performance oriented, even though they want to talk that. It's it feels good and looks cool, which is really what that car is about.
At least it's not a yoke.
it's verging on it, but no, it's not a yoke. a yoke would be a complete joke in a performance car like that. A street car anyway. The Z06 is going to be awesome. I want to hear that thing. I want to drive it. I want to have it on the track. Like, I'm already in line to hopefully get on at Spring Mountain when they bring those in for the Corvette Owner School there. I've done the C7 Owner School back there at the track, and it's so fun. Definitely something to experience. And if you buy a Corvette, please, like, use the credit. They give you, like, a bunch of money towards the school or a free day at the school for an owner school at Spring Mountain. Just go. Like, it's totally worth it. Spring Mountain does an amazing job. The Ron Fellows Performance Driving School. You learn a ton, even in a single day. Like, so awesome. And they'll allow you to upgrade to the level 2 or level 3 classes, I believe, for a small upcharge. And it's worth it. The 3-day program I did was the first performance class program I ever did. And it was really, really, like, set a foundation for my driving skills, which I really appreciate.
Awesome.
Z06. I mean, it's all about the sound that comes out of that thing, and it's going to be fast as hell, slower than EVs, which is the funny part, right? But it's going to sound right. It's going to feel right. It's mid-engine. It rotates really well. You can kind of go fast enough with the top down on the spider in the rain to not get water in the car. Yeah. I have tested that. It's pretty confidence inspiring, especially the electronics. The nannies on that thing are pretty smart, and you can turn most of them off. It's a good car. I'm trying to think that's a good segue into the other cars of the show. That one's naturally aspirated, so a lot of people can see that for the first time, which is cool. Naturally aspirated V8, the most powerful out there. The 4xe Grand Cherokee was this. That thing's going to be awesome. So I was just recently on the 2-door Grand Cherokee launch, and I got to see that, but I didn't get to drive it. Nobody's driven it yet, or to the public or media. And the regular new Grand Cherokee is really, really good. It's amazing what it can do. The exterior styling, like, I'm on the fence about, but the inside is pretty nice. Some of it's a little bland, but it's like, it all functional. It's really nice.
So 4xe, super. That thing is going to be an amazing value, a really good vehicle to drive as a commuter car a little bit. Like, people are like, oh, it's huge. But people want big cars in America. So that vehicle, you're going to be able to do, I think, 20 or 30 miles on all EV. So you're going to drive around town in all EV mode. you're burning big tires and brakes because it's a big heavy vehicle, but it's overall going to be it's just a good family hauler. You can do road trips with it. You can actually off-road it. I mean, I rock crawled the thing and it's really impressive. Put some basic sliders on it. I like the Overland edition with the Overland off-road pack. So okay. It gives you most of the things of the Trailhawk, but gives you way nicer interior. You can get heated and cooled massage nice. Seats. You can get a lot of the heads-up display and the nicer bits in the Overland package. You do get 2 inches less ground clearance, though, which is sort of a thing. But yeah, you can tweak that with some tires.
Yes. There you go. Yes. We have a 14 Cherokee, and I'm like, I want the 4xe Trailhawk. Like, that is the next step. That is where I want to go next. So
4xe Trailhawk is really cool. The problem is, I think they try, to me anyway, it's very similar to what they did with like the Subaru Adventure stuff. It's very plasticky. Like, yeah. Somehow plastic makes it more adventure-y and outdoors. I'm like, come on. Like,
you didn't get that limbo? Red toe hooks means you can do anything off-road.
Right,
and
yeah.
Plastic also means you can do anything off-road. So oh you put those apparently, two together. Match made.
I missed the memo, apparently. a big surprise for me at the show that it was kind of hiding in the corner, but is the new 2022 Ram ProMaster vans.
Yeah.
Okay.
So huge upgrades. I always overlook that thing. They don't offer it in all-wheel drive. They don't offer it in four-wheel drive. It's front-wheel drive only, which is unique to the vans in the U.S. market. But what that does is give you a lower load floor in the back because you have no drive shaft and no axle to fit under the back of it. And it is the widest of any of the U.S. commercial vans as well. So you get more interior room, and it has the most vertical sides. So it's way easier to build this stuff out inside. But the big advantage for 2022 is they got rid of the old, I think it was a 6-speed transmission, and now they have a 9-speed under it.
Okay.
So the same one that's in the new Grand Cherokee.
Nice.
So, that's going to make a huge difference in fuel economy and otherwise. But the big stuff is the interior. Yeah. It doesn't have like a 5-inch crappy little infotainment screen anymore. It has like a proper, I forget how big it is, 9-inch or something. But it's like a real infotainment screen with the latest tech, has all the new safety features, cross-traffic avoidance and emergency braking and all that kind of stuff, a blind spot monitoring. Some really cool tech features for security. So if people's trying to break into the back of your van at a stoplight or whatever, if you're a commercial user, that you'll know about it. It has cool new key technology. And the steering wheel is straight out of the parts bin from Jeep. It's the same steering wheel as in the Grand Cherokee. They're like, well, we're not telling you that. But
yeah,
right now, I'm like, yeah, that's the same one I had last week at the launch of the Grand Cherokee with a Ram logo on the airbag cover.
You know, sometimes so part
overall,
sharing
it's
is
just
a good
way
thing.
Nicer place to be inside of,
nice.
And it's got a better transmission, and I think it's like the same price essentially. So, it's a pretty compelling van in the out there.
Yeah, definitely, very cool. Very cool.
All right. Well, before we jump into our final segment, where we will segue completely away from the LA Auto Show, were there any other notable either vehicles there or omissions that you just thoroughly expected? I know we kind of touched on the Mazda CX-50 and the Integra, but anything that kind of head scratcher leaving the show?
Yeah, so omission was definitely the new Lotus Emira. Mm-hmm. I think that thing looks awesome, and I want to check it out. I drove the Evora GT recently, and I'm in love. I want to sell all my cars and buy one. So hopefully the new Emira will drop the prices of the Evora enough that someday in the next year or so I can buy one. But that is a really cool car that was at a number of other events recently, mm-hmm. even in the LA area, mm-hmm. but not at the show. So that was interesting.
I know a couple of journalists that flew in for the show that had one as a press vehicle while they were there, and I'm like, that is just ironic. So yeah,
lucky. All right. Trying to think what else. The Canoe.
Yes,
so the Canoe van, obviously been talked about now for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. I've written many stories about it years ago for Gear Junkie. Basically it's a full electric Volkswagen combi van, essentially, like when you think about it. It's really cool. I saw it in person. This is the first time I've seen it in person, but it's uber, uber prototype-y. I mean, 3D printed everything, parts on it. It's not, I mean, maybe it rolls down the road. I don't know. And a lot of gimmicky little stuff like skateboard holder in the door and things like that. It definitely has wraparound seating in the back, like a bench. And they say that's coming to production on both models. They have two models coming out, supposedly, I believe, late next year. We'll start production. So I don't think we're going to see them till the following year. But they're having somebody else in the U.S., I think it's Arkansas or something, make them for them. And then they're building their own plant that will be ready in like 25 or something.
Okay. Interesting. So,
lots of, again, sort of vaporware. There's so many of these EV companies trying to come out of nowhere and build something. It's so hard to get a car to meet U.S. regulations and everything else and bring it to market. The amount of money required is in the billions. I mean, it's just nuts to bring a car to market these days. But that thing is really, really neat. And if they ever actually come out with it, people will buy it. It's, it's cool.
I showed it to my wife because she's super excited about the ID Buzz from VW. You know, you mentioned VW van. That is, I think it takes it to a whole nother level. It's very cool and unique and different. I saw a couple other journalists complaining that they brought a black one and put it in the most poorly lit section of the entire show. So you can hardly see much on it. But what you could see was pretty awesome. So
My photos of it are horrible.
I didn't even try. I should have, but every time we went over there, there was just swarms of people. So there is genuine interest, but we'll see.
Do you think they'll actually bring the Volkswagen bus to the market in the US?
All signs point to yes. I'm holding my breath because it's a very intriguing vehicle to me as well.
I think it's awesome, but I think it'll be a Euro only, or I don't think they'll bring it here, sadly. Just like the California, which like they should have here. They've already had here for journalists, and then they removed them because they were for their Euro-spec cars. But the only other big story, there was some other EV. There was tons of EV SUV crossover things, one with like a gaming console under the hood. That's what they were promoting. That's like supposed to go into production next year. Indie EV is the name of the company.
I don't even know if I saw
it. Looks like every other one. It was in the lobby as you walk in the door. I'm sorry, but there's no way in hell that thing's coming to market next year. Like they were literally like, oh yeah, in like a couple of months. I'm like, no, it's not. No. But yeah, it has gaming like VR and stuff for all the people in the car and a full gaming like computer under the hood just for that, for all the occupants. But the big story in the 4x4 and off-road space that was at the show was Bremach. So Bremach 4x4, they were in the lobby as well near the Indy EV thing. The car, it's a UAZ Russian vehicle that's already on the market. It has been for like a decade in Russia and some of those Eastern Bloc countries. That vehicle is a SUV with a body on frame with a proper low range two-speed transfer case, Spicer axles under it. I forget what the transmission is, but it's like a decent like Bosch transmission or something in it. It looks compelling on paper. And the biggest thing is proper low range body on frame. You can modify it however you want. $27,000 all in.
Wow.
Right? US price, $27,000. They say it'll be here in February of 2022. Again, zero chance, not happening. But the vehicle's already done. They're just trying to get it through U.S. regulations. Right. And the best they could tell any of the journalists that I talked to that were talking to them, including myself, was, we got a guy. I'm like, if you are starting a company in the U.S. and it's we got a guy that's going to get you there, come on, let's be honest. That's not going to happen. Goodness. I think they'll bring it to market here. I really do. But I don't know when. Again, I've been writing about that for 2 years. And it's already a product, so it's not like they got to do much. They just got to make it U.S. compliant.
Yeah.
But I got in it. So I sat in it. I did a little review. I'm going to throw on some social media at some point here in the next week or so. Everything in it is horrid. Like, it's just plastic. Like, the best way I could describe it is third world rental car quality.
Wow.
All right.
Very industrial, but not strong plastics and rubber. And like, I touched the door handle and opened the door, and that handle like half broke off in my hand. And I was being careful with it. It's a production car, but it has a 5-inch infotainment screen, which is really just a radio, I think. I don't think it has even that. I don't even know if it has nav. That's how it's $27,000.
You get what you pay for.
Nothing. Yeah.
Well, I saw it explained that by another journalist there that it really felt like we're in the dot-com era of electric vehicles, and that there are so many different ones out there, and everybody's trying to, you know, bring their own unique spin to it, gaming consoles and whatnot, that you never know what you'll see, and you never know what'll actually be on the market, so to speak. So, yeah, very interesting show. I'm sure we could talk about it for hours more, but we want to respect your time. And so we're going to close out with a segment that we do with all of our interviews that Matt likes to call
Random Misfire. So this is just a fun back and forth, yes or no, either or kind of deal here. And there's 8 questions because all vehicles should come with 8 cylinders. And so we'll kind of go back and forth. Corey, I'll ask one. I'll ask one, and then we've got a couple of bonus questions if you don't mind sticking on with us just an ounce longer for our Patreons that we reserve for them. And if you're ready, we'll jump right in.
Let's do it. I guess I'm ready.
All right. So you are big in the overlanding off-road in that community. I'm sure you've driven both of these quite extensively at this point. Are you team Wrangler or team Bronco?
Wrangler.
Okay. Ugh. Yeah. See, look at there.
Making enemies already. No, I'm just kidding.
And just kidding. Like that. So I cannot argue with you at all on that one. That's a nice choice.
All right. Are you a fan of more tech or less tech?
In vehicles.
Yes, but specifically in vehicles. So do you like the rigs that have the lane departure and the nannies and the Apple CarPlay and all that stuff? Or do you like the old school
$27,000 rigs that you can break a door handle off in your hand?
That's a tough question. Me personally, I want to drive them with less things, but I want the more things on the road because I want people to be safer and not to hit my little kid and wife needing to work.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
Let's see here. Manual or automatic?
Come on. I mean, row your own gear. 3 pedals, yes. Always.
Well, I mean, you can see the shirt that Matt's wearing now. Yeah. So.
I shift myself. Yes.
Yeah, it would be wrong not to ask that question while wearing it.
But not in a Wrangler because that transmission sucks. Buy it in an automatic.
Yes. Yeah. My brother had a JK Rubicon, and I had a 2012 Camaro SS at the time, and very different 6-speed transmission experience all the way around.
All right. Let's see. Let's go back to FCA versus Famoco. TRX or Raptor?
TRX.
Man.
You were 0-2, Matt. So, yeah, he was anti all things Hellcat until I got him behind the wheel of one. So I just need to get him, back-to-back TRX and Raptor, and he'll come out.
We'll see.
Raptor wins because it has two-wheel drive. That's the only reason a Raptor is better than the TRX. It's because you can put it in two-wheel drive and do smoky burnout, two-wheel burnouts whenever you want.
Yes.
The TRX is better in every other measurable way.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Let's see here. Do you name your vehicles?
I've tried and I fail, so no.
I feel like there's some interesting stories behind there. But okay.
Let's see. Internal combustion or EV? If you have to choose one.
That's actually a very compelling answer because you were talking so highly of the 4xe. I think we just completely skipped a step, and the plug-in hybrids... I continue to maintain that's where it's at right now and where it should be right now. And
the next 5 years should be plug-in hybrids. It's going to be more EVs than that, but plug-in hybrids are the way that most people, including the naysayers that want only V8s, naturally aspirated V8s and everything, it makes sense. It has more performance. You can drive it in full EV mode. Like it just, and you can have the horsepower and blow great sounds out the tailpipe. Like it's great.
Checks all the boxes.
Yeah. Doesn't sound as good as naturally aspirated V8, I will admit to
there
that.
You go. Yeah.
Oh man, I've only got one left. Let's see. What is on a road trip playlist? You can go genre, you can go artist, you can however you wanna.
We're gonna go podcast.
Okay. Oh, nice. All right. Much
honestly, like I don't get to listen to podcasts that often, and when I do, I listen to them quite a bit when I'm on airplanes and doing road trips.
Yeah,
and I don't listen to that much music anymore. I used to a lot. I tend to listen to podcasts in my free time.
Nice, nice. All right, I'm gonna go with this one to finish out: off road or on road?
God. How about off road and on track?
Okay. All right.
Off road because it's rare and you can almost not actually go off road in this country. There's very few places that there's actually off road. Yes. There's plenty of places that are off pavement, but there's very few places that are off road. And those are the truly special places that are rare, take a lot of work to get to, and are worth every second of that effort because you have memories that last a lifetime.
Yes. Love it. Fantastic answer.
Well, Ryan, we thank you so much for coming on, chewing the fat, talking EVs, talking off-roading with us. Why don't you give our listeners a peek into where all they can find you, the best places to find you, so they can continue on your journey with you?
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me on. It's been a great discussion. Exploring Elements is kind of my personal project. You can find me on all of the socials on Explore Elements, but Exploring Elements will get you there. Or my name, Brian Dorr, which is BryonDorr. It's spelled really weird. It's not Byron. It is Brian. Yeah, you can find me. I am the editor-in-chief over at AutoWise and the motors guy over at Gear Junkie. Tread Magazine, you'll see a lot of my stuff in print. Diesel World Magazine as well. And a little bit everywhere else. But yeah, Exploring Elements is the easiest way to get a hold of me and follow my adventures where I touch on and share a lot of content from all this other stuff that I do. ExploringElements.com will get you to all those social medias. That website needs a lot of work right now. I've neglected it because I've been working for so many other people and trying to make a living, support the family lately. But yeah, that's my project. So yeah, follow along, and I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, we thank you so much for joining with us, and just look forward to keeping up with your journeys as well. All right, Matt. That was a good one.
It was a good episode. It was a great episode.
Thoroughly enjoyed chatting with him. I do feel like we could have gone on for another hour and just continued to pick his brain, because I feel on some topics we just kind of scratched the surface, and other topics we dove in a little bit more. Would definitely like to pick his brain about some of the rigs he's gotten to experience.
Oh, yeah.
More hands-on than you or I have. So he definitely has a unique perspective on the industry that you can go check and follow him on his socials and everything that he's doing.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I'm going to have to go check out that Russian four-wheeler and see exactly what he's talking about there. I know where he is speaking of in the hall, and you and I did not venture there often. It was down there by the Hyundai Inn booth.
Okay.
But we typically stayed upstairs and went around. So we did not get as much face time with that rig or those booths as he did. But yeah, all around, LA was a very interesting show in what was there and what wasn't. Very interesting to see how the show circuit recovers, because famously New York was called off maybe 2 weeks prior to the show. Like, everything was made, shipped, booked, planned,
reserved. They were on the verge of starting to set stuff up in the auditorium.
Rough to see something happen in a major city like that with a big show. So you and I kind of held out on LA for a little while until we got done with our car show.
Right.
And then we started talking seriously about, okay, well, I think it's time we both go to one.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a good time.
And you managed to wrangle me into the one that had EVs from wall to wall, floor to ceiling.
Okay, okay. I'm building it into next year's budget. SEMA is on the calendar, on the list. So let's make it happen. Let's hope that, according to Brian, it's a little more well-attended. It's hard to recover from a down year. He said, what, 40% down?
Yeah, 40% down.
That makes it hard to sell it again the following year, yep. But extenuating circumstances, we'll just see where the show circuit takes us over the next few months. We've got Chicago coming up right around the corner in cold climate, and we're going in February. So we'll see what comes of that. Two boys from Texas heading up into the Windy City.
Yeah, but could be interesting.
Yeah.
But I'm starting to see this little bit of a ripple in the industry with – and I don't know if there's any correlation with the EV stuff or not, but a lot of the guys that I follow are beginning to step back. Like, they've been in the business for 20 or 30 or 40 years, and they've been doing the magazines, they've been, you know, articles weekly and all kinds of stuff, all the travel for the past 20 years, and they're getting to a point where they're stepping away from all of that chaos. And one of them in particular, you know, was grateful. It was the first time in 20 years he had not attended SEMA.
Okay.
And he appreciated the fact that he wasn't there. Like, just could chill out and enjoy doing what he wanted to do and that type of thing. So I'm wondering, and that's not the exception to the rule, right. I guess is what I'm saying. There seems to be a shift, this new age of, you know, YouTube reviewers and stars and everything else that are moving into the automotive world and the EVs and all of the garbage that goes along with those. So I'm curious to see what the aftermarket looks like, especially in the next 5 to 10 years. Yeah. Regulation on vehicle continues to go up, so the things that we are allowed to do to them is more and more restricted.
Right to repair and all that good stuff.
All kinds of stupidity, and I'll call it that. It's ridiculous. If the vehicle's safe to operate, why should you be able to tell me what kind of tire I can put on my car?
Exactly.
Anyway.
No argument here, man.
So I like I say, I'm curious to see. L.A. was cram-packed with EVs, and
that was to be expected. They're playing to the market. California is the largest new car market in the country, if not the world. So it really is their fault. I'm put blame where blame is due. It is their fault when they say 2035, EV is all you can buy, and all the automakers are like scrambling to meet that deadline as well.
Right.
Even General Motors is backpedaling a little from their 2035 deadline. So, you know, we shall see. We shall see. But it was nice. Brian alluded to JLR brought out two brand new Land Rovers.
Yeah, yeah.
Both V8 powered.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Z06 was there.
Yeah.
Naturally aspirated V8.
Right.
There is still new petrol powered stuff out there to get excited about.
There is. Yeah, definitely. We should probably wrap up this episode because there's a chance we could get political and...
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So with that, we thank Brian again for joining us and talking all things LA Auto Show and a bit more. We thank you for listening and joining on this conversation with us each and every week. You know where to find us. You know what to do. But if you don't, GT Garage Talk is your home for all things Garage Talk. And we'll give you links to our Facebook, our Instagram, our YouTube channel, and let you know what we're driving next. And until next time, bye.
So many EVs.